Welcome to IndyCar Weekly. This is Nat Newell. I am the motorsports editor for IndyStar, and I'm joined, of course, by Nathan Brown, our motorsports insider. We got a lot to talk about on IndyCar with the end of the season, obviously. Scott Dixon winning the championship, Joseph Newgarde winning the last race in St. Pete. We will also run down some interesting information Nathan got from Roger Penske in an exclusive one-on-one interview. Plenty of silly season updates, as well as some questions from folks on Twitter. So, well, Nathan, let's start with the last race. Obviously, Scott Dixon wins his sixth title. You have a story posted currently on IndyStar.com with Dixon talking about going for number seven, which obviously tied Foyt for the most ever. I just thought it was really interesting how sort of open he was about, how important that was and that being a real goal for him.
Yeah, this is really the first time he's been pretty measured in his career talking about goals. He doesn't typically talk too much about things that are too far off in the horizon. He said in that story that he wasn't really looking to talk about the historic number seven until he got to six. I think for him, with how much of a tunnel vision he has on his entire career, we heard him all season when we were talking about the championship, that he was just really focused on the next race. And I think, we hear that so much. I think there really is some truth to that. You could hear him when he was talking about this year's championship that we kind of noticed maybe a little bit of a different change of tone once we got past the Harvest Grand Prix, and maybe some of those nerves kind of picked up a little bit. They did, of course, shadow Joseph the entire race. I think now that this has started to settle in, maybe this is starting to feel more real and more possible, and he's probably starting to get a better idea on just how big a deal both this championship that they were finally able to achieve this year and the potential for number seven now on the horizon. And with him having no desire to hang up the helmet anytime soon, you almost have to think that that's got to happen here at some point.
Where do you think he's viewed historically? I mean, obviously, I don't think anyone's ever going to be seen the same way that Foyt and Andretti are. But the numbers are there, effectively. You hear from fans, and what's your own personal thoughts on that topic?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think it almost kind of comes to how we hear fans talk about basketball players. I mean, Michael Jordan and LeBron James, Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, all these guys played in all these different eras, and in racing it really probably couldn't be any more different than any other sport. Scott brought up earlier this week when I got a chance to talk to him that AJ Foyt started his career in a front engine roadster and ended it in a car that's very similar to the cars that drivers compete in today in the IndyCar series. He was competing on dirt, all of these different tracks that have been so far gone from the IndyCar schedule. I think there's just this lore with AJ Foyt that I don't know that anyone will ever match. He's kind of got all of these things. He's at the moment leads in the number of wins. He leads in championships. He's one of the three drivers that have ever won four times in the Indy 500. So he's got he hits all of these marks that, Dixon is now closing in on those wins. I think he's at 50 now, and he's got 17 more to tie AJ, but also only has one Indy 500. Dixon has competed in probably one of the more competitive time periods for the 500, I think you would probably be able to argue. But beyond AJ, I mean, the next name that is brought up always is Mario. Mario leads the series in poles. He's second in wins. He's right up there in championships too. I think that's a pretty good comparison. They're pretty close in wins at the moment. I think Scott will have a very realistic chance to pass Mario next year. I think Mario sits at 54, if I have that in my head correctly. He was never the pole sitter champion quite like Mario was, but I think in just about every other way, he's a pretty good comparison there. And still with three, four, five, 6 years left on his career. He's gonna get past Mario and all of those marks, and probably get up to AJ here too, and maybe even surpass him. So I think those three are a really good comparison. I don't, you know, once you get to that, I think it's up to personal preference. But without a doubt, Scott Dixon will go down as one of the best two or three IndyCar drivers in history when he decides to hang it up.
You think he catches Foyt in total wins?
I mean, with the pace he's going on, I mean, it seems like no matter whether he wins a championship or finishes second or third, he's almost always winning, you know, three, four races a year, maybe two on a not-so-great one. I think he's now won a race in 16 consecutive seasons and a race total in, I think, 18 or 19. So he's always ticking off those boxes as we get back to 17 race schedules with as good as he's still driving at this point. You know, I'd say an average of probably three wins a year for as long as he's driving at this level. And you got to think that's another, you know, 4 or 5 years probably. So that's, you know, at that point, that's already 15. You know, and if he's really that close to AJ, you know, say he hangs it up on a season with 65 wins, it would be hard to imagine him to not come back one more, because I do think that would really mean a lot to him. As we heard, the seventh championship would mean a heck of a lot to him, and I would imagine that win total would do the same.
Let's go rapid fire. So much happened in the St. Pete race this weekend. It's going to be tricky to get to all of it in a reasonably timed podcast. But let's start with Newgarden. Obviously, he did what he needed to do by winning the race, but Dixon shadowed him and did an excellent job staying with him. Just talk about Newgarden's performance on Sunday.
It was, I think it took a little while to settle in just how great of a day he had. I mean, when you think about you know, a baseball player or a basketball player, you know, calling their shot. I mean, I guess he didn't necessarily predict a win, but he, in order to have any realistic chance at a championship, he had to go out and win this race. And you're one of 24 drivers in the field. He didn't qualify particularly well. He started eighth. Dixon was there in 11th. And to be able to be in the right spot every single time to avoid all of these different accidents was really impressive. And to make the move that he made on lap 80 to jump both Colton Herta and Alex Palou within a couple corners and take over the lead when he was sitting there in third, you know, it was right off a restart. Guys were struggling with restarts all day long with cold tires and cold brakes on this 1.8-mile street course. And it was a really impressive day for Joseph. I think it obviously gets overshadowed a little bit just because of, you know, Scott Dixon prevailing. He ended up beating Joseph by 16 points in the end in the championship. But for Joseph to get a fourth win this year in a 14-race season, and still not come away with a title. He only finished outside of the top 10, I think, two times this year. It was just a really great day. And he's a very, very solid runner-up driver for a championship this year.
We obviously just got done talking about Foyt and Andretti, but really, I mean, Dixon and Newgarden, so, you know, Newgarden's obviously proven what a great driver he is. A lot can happen, but, I mean, it seems like he's in that discussion potentially as well. Do you think people appreciate just how good IndyCar has it to have Newgarden and Dixon both going right now?
Yeah, I don't know that we do at this point, but we certainly should. He's been with Team Penske now for four seasons. He finished first in the championship twice, second once, and outside the podium in a little bit of a down year as far as he's probably concerned in 2018 when Dixon did win. But this was probably as competitive as we have had it as far as championships go, especially without double points in this last race for these last 4 years as these two have been going at it. I really just hope that we get several more years of this. I don't think that there's any reason why we won't. I can't imagine Joseph stepping away from the sport, can't imagine him leaving Team Penske, and can't imagine Scott stepping away in the next few years either. So anytime that these two are in this sport, you've got to think that they're going to both be fighting for championships. And then you've got guys behind them like Alexander Rossi, Will Power, Simon Pagenaud, Probably Colton Herta and Pato O'Ward here soon. So you get deeper beyond them. They're probably the two strongest contenders every single year, but the people behind them are going to continue pushing them, and I think that's what makes this really special too.
Like I said, we'll go rapid fire through the race. Some of the lot of news out of that. Will Power had the pole, but then crashed another in what's been a really bad luck year for him.
Yeah, it was. Power had a chance to take third place this year, which would have been really, really strong considering how his first half of the year started. He struggled with shifting early in the first like four or five laps of the race and dropped down to fourth, and then just lost it in I think turn three or turn four of the course. It was a tough day for drivers dealing with some of the marbles coming off the tires, and some of those corners got to be really sketchy, and he just was, you know, kind of put the car in the wrong spot where you can't really put it, driving by himself, and spun right into the wall, and his day was over with. It was a tough way to end the year for him. He, you know, got out of the car and threw his gloves. You could see how frustrated he was. He'd been kind of measured in interviews all year, even when talking about the frustration, but things certainly kind of boiled over for them, for him there a little bit, I think.
You mentioned the Power crashed out the same turn. So did Alexander Rossi. I give him credit. You know, he's never one who's shy to sort of point the finger when he thinks someone else is to blame, often accurately, but he made no bones about it. That was on him on Sunday. Just talk about, you know, another bad luck. Power had a bad luck season. Rossi obviously did too. Just talk about his day and season.
Yeah, and this was really, I mean, I guess you could point to the Indy 500. I know he was supremely frustrated with the ruling from the from IndyCar officials, but beyond that, this was really the only instance this year that Rossi did anything wrong, that, you know, on track that made a real big difference. I mean, he got pummeled from behind to start the first race at Gateway that pretty much ruined that whole race weekend. Engine didn't fire at Texas, had another mechanical in the GMR Grand Prix, but this was really a tough way to see this season finish. This was his race to win. He'd led, I think, about 65 laps or so, or at least more than 60, and was certainly the stronger car. We were going through the final pit sequence there, and was going into, I think, that same corner that Power lost it in, just got into the marbles, lost it right into the wall, and he finishes a frustrating year. The first time his IndyCar season, or in his IndyCar career, to not have a win, which was very atypical for him, but I wouldn't expect this to be the norm. I just think it was a lot of things that kind of piled up for him and for some of his Andretti Autosport teammates as well. So expect him to be back strong next year, and fighting again, as we've grown to expect him fighting again for a championship.
The race was also Scott McLaughlin's debut. A lot of, I guess, hype around it. He obviously went out early, but what were your impressions of his first race?
Yeah, his first practice near the end on Saturday, he was, I think, with maybe about 5 minutes to go, he was sitting, I think, second in the fastest lap time. Didn't qualify super well. He was, I think, doing okay in his first race when he kind of got caught up in a restart situation. I think he was trying to block Marco Andretti on making a pass. His rear tires got locked up and lost control, ran right into Rinus VK, and set Rinus back on the day. So it wasn't maybe a great rookie performance from Scott, but I would still, you know, anyone who Roger Penske wants to bring on to his team, having not seen him in an Indy car before, I think says a lot about the potential that he sees in the driver. And Roger doesn't typically pick too wrong on drivers, bringing them into the fold in his teams. So I would expect a lot out of Scott. He'll get a chance to test on the oval later this week at IMS to get through his rookie orientation program there, and will undergo a lot more testing. So I think this testing he gets in the next week and a half or so, as we move into this off season, I would expect a lot more competitive driver as we get to go back to St. Pete for the next race in to start the 2021 season in March.
Finally, a strong day for the Foyt team. You know, just talk about their finish as well.
Yeah, it was a really great day. Sebastian Bourdais qualified the car pretty high in the fast six process. I think he might have started seventh, and he climbed up to fourth, survived all the carnage in front and behind him. And in particular, a really strong day for Charlie Kimball. He has kept the car pretty clean all year, but just hasn't shown that pace that you would hope to see from a full season driver. And he, I had a chance to talk to him before the race this weekend, and felt like if he could, along with Sebastian, if they could together show some promise in teaming up together and put together a strong performance to end the year with, that there might be a chance that he could stick around there. And they both did that. I really think Charlie is a driver that deserves to probably continue being in this series. Where he ends up this offseason is a little bit unknown, but finishing the year with an eighth place performance, his second top 10 of the year, that's certainly a good way for the Foyt team to go into this offseason as they continue to build and hope that next year is the real full year that we get a chance to see a little bit different team.
Let's run down the final standings here. Obviously, we've hit on the guys at the top, but right after Dixon and Newgarden, obviously our Herta and Award. You touched on them briefly in terms of having some young talent coming up, but again, I mean, for those two guys to finish number three and number four speaks well of them, and obviously a lot of there should be some excitement around the series about adding talent.
Absolutely. On Colton, I think this is the jump that he needed to take after a little bit of an inconsistent year last year as a rookie. You know, he did pick up two wins, a couple poles, but did struggle at times to just find those, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh place performances when he didn't necessarily have a winning car. And he did that this year. Only finished out of the top 10 three times. One of those being an 11th place finish on Sunday, where he also had a top three car and I believe spun at some point in the final 20 or 25 laps, and still managed to finish on the lead lap, but had a bit rough day compared to what he could have had. Pato finished second to Joseph for the second time this year. He finished second for the third time this season, along with another third place at Gateway. So this is an incredibly strong first full season campaign for him, for the Arrow McLaren SP driver. I would expect to see him in victory lane here soon when we get started next year. And he's a driver that, maybe he doesn't contend for a championship next year when you see all these drivers, but I would expect him to be close. Certainly would be able to contend for a top three spot and continue his rise. Joseph had a lot of great things to say about him really all year, but particularly in the post-race interview on Sunday was says a lot about both about Joseph and about Pato, that Joseph made a point to bring up Pato in the post-race interview and just praise him for how great a driver he is and how great of a future he should have in front of him.
I'm just looking down the list here, so if there's someone you think I'm missing, then speak up. But Graham Rahal, number six, I think that was a good season for him. Just talk about what that means for Graham.
Yeah, another driver that was really consistently in the top 10 all year. I think he had nine top 10 finishes, I think felt like he was really close on several races this year that he could have won. His last race win did come in 2017, but he's right there on the cusp of being a title contender. His teammate there in seventh, Takuma Sato, of course, won the 500. A little bit of a rough finish to the season following that Indy 500 win along after second at Gateway, but still a sixth and seventh for Rahal's two drivers is nothing to complain about. Simon Pagenaud, a little bit of a rough year after his strong start with the win at Iowa, to finish eighth, the farthest down a Team Penske driver has finished in a couple years. And then we've already talked a little bit about Rossi, and Rossi's teammate Ryan Hunter-Reay caps the top 10 in 10th place, was able to put together a fifth place finish after another up and down season for an Andretti driver. Beyond the top 10, the things that stand out to me, obviously you have rookie of the year Rinus VK in 14th place, in a battle where anyone from 12th to 15th, those four drivers there were separated by 3 points in the final standings. Jack Harvey finished 15th, but had several top tens in his first full-time year. I think Jack's a top 10 driver in this series and would expect to continue to see more out of him next year, potentially a podium or even a win. Let's look here. A surprise, certainly, when you see a name like Marco Andretti down in 20th in the standings, as we've talked about all year, a rough year beyond his Indy 500 pole. Only had one top 10 finish and finished 13th in the 500 there. So kind of a head scratcher. I know they dealt with a lot of mechanical stuff and even had some issues like on Sunday where he got kind of taken out by Takuma Sato and finished 20th. Just kind of a year where nothing really went right except for that pole day on Sunday before the 500. But got to think that, you know, he's still wanting to stick around and do this. He's a co-owner on his car, and I think, you know, we'll probably see a bounce back from him. He's still, you know, typically around the, you know, 10th to 12th range as far as driver standings go. So we'll be interesting to see what he can rebound for in 2021.
You had a one-on-one interview with Roger Penske this weekend, in which there were a number of interesting things said. Obviously, one thing that jumps out is the tickets sold were at, I believe, 165,000 for next year, which is ahead of the pace last year. Obviously, a lot of people rolled over tickets. They weren't given a chance for, you know, that was an obvious thing to do. But I would think it's a good sign for the series and the Indy 500 that that many people are ready to go to the race in May, barring with the pandemic, of course.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, you always want to, after a weird year like this, especially a year where fans weren't able to attend the 500, you certainly wouldn't want to think that folks would be getting disinterested in the race. So it's certainly a good sign that that they've still got as much interest as ever and folks hungry to be able to go watch that race in person next year. You know, we continue to cross our fingers and hope that the health metrics move in the right direction when we go through this winter and into next year. I know at this point, you know, Roger told me that they don't, you know, you can't really predict what next May is going to look like. And so they're, I think, putting together a list of several plans at this point, probably on the outset of on several of those to see what they can possibly be able to do. So once we get to the spring and have a better idea of where the health metrics on this pandemic look like a little bit, they'll have a good starting point, a good jumping off point to be able to plan and hopefully certainly be able to have tens of fans attend that race.
Roger Penske's comments on the Indy Lights. Just give us a quick recap on how that came down.
Yeah, the Indy Lights schedule for 2021 was released on Thursday late morning. And the first thing the fans understandably noticed on that was that there was no Freedom 100 on the slate for 2021. It's been a really big part of that series in terms of just, you know, how big it is for the series in general. I mean, it's their Indy 500. It's the one of the few chances that those drivers get to drive on an oval. It's their one chance to drive on the IMS oval. No one else, you know, in the latter series coming up gets a chance to drive on the oval. So that's really a really, really big deal for those drivers. It's started back in 2003. You've had guys like Ed Carpenter, Joseph Newgarden, other drivers with some pretty big names, Colton Herta, Oliver Askew, win that race. And it's a really big deal for those young drivers. It attracts a lot of attention for their sponsors, either that they have at that point or is a big deal that they could give to a potential sponsor as they're looking to, you know, build on their opportunity coming into the series that following year, you know, after they would presumably leave Light. So from what Roger said, you know, I think his biggest concern is driver safety in that race. We have, you know, we did have a pretty ugly accident that ended up being okay a couple laps into the 2019 Freedom 100, where a driver's car ended up kind of sliding along the top of the wall and was touching the fence line there. So I'm sure that probably, you know, didn't leave a great taste in his mouth when he's thinking about taking over the series, and that happened just the last race. But really, overall, it's been an exciting race. It's been really one of the most exciting races that we've had actually on that track in the last 10 years. You know, they almost always consistently put together photo finishes. We even had a four wide finish here 6 years or so ago. You've got guys finishing in with, you know, just a couple thousandths of a second of each other to decide the race winner. So it was a little surprising. I think it caught a lot of people off guard, and Roger wasn't necessarily super pleased with the reaction to the decision, I don't think either, and let out some of his frustration in that interview, which you can check out on IndyStar.com. But, you know, I guess I would hope that they're able to find a little bit of a middle ground to make him feel comfortable holding that race there, because it's tough to train these drivers as they're coming up through the ladder to be able to race in what is, of course, the biggest race in IndyCar. If they haven't raced on that oval before, the lights calendar in 2021 only has two ovals, period, without the Freedom 100. So it'll be interesting to see how these drivers that come up through karting and then maybe spend 3-4 years in the road to Indy without a whole lot of oval experience, how they continue to adapt as they jump up into IndyCar in 2022 and beyond.
Yeah, we've talked about it, obviously, not on the podcast, but it struck me as a little odd is why you wouldn't schedule the event and then just tell everybody, hey, if you know, first sign of trouble, this goes because we need the flexibility to get the 500 in. So, that's sort of what jumped out at me. And yeah, and I guess I sort of understand his frustration. I mean, Penske buys IndyCar, IMS, everything. Last year, and then the pandemic hits, you know, it's got to be the worst time possible, but he, you know, he supported the series and made sure everything, they had as complete a season as possible. So I understand some of the frustration, certainly, but it does seem a little odd. He's also with the Brickyard 400 going to the road course, there is always this sense that, you know, only the Indy 500, or there used to be a sense that only the Indy 500 should run on the oval, that kind of thing. Do you think there's a little bit of that traditionalist in Penske, or is that part of the equation?
He certainly did say in that interview I had with him over the weekend, you know, he made a point to bring that up himself, and he did feel, that there was a sense of pride there, you know, that the 500 is now the only race running on that oval. I don't know that he would go and say outright that it's his goal and, you know, it's his drive to make sure that the 500 is the only race on that track. But he certainly said, both in this interview and prior, that IndyCar does not want to be hosting races that it doesn't think are deserving of the history and the fame of IMS. You know, I think they've got a good variety at the moment with having the Xfinity and Cup drivers on the road course. You've got next year IndyCar itself running two road races, and then the 500. You've got Indy Lights running a couple races on the road course. But, you know, it is a little weird, you know, after we got over this hurdle in 1994 when the Brickyard 400 came for the first time. You know, up until then, at that point, for decades and decades and decades, the Indy 500 had been the only oval race at that track. It would seem a little weird to revert back to that, but I do think Roger really appreciates the history of that track and the series a lot, and that could certainly be something that's maybe driving some of this in the background a little bit.
Let's move on to silly season. We just posted a story that you had on Marcus Ericsson returning with Ganassi. What else do you expect to see in the coming days on which drivers are going where?
Yeah, the biggest seat I think that people are curious about at the moment is who might be Marcus's teammate there in the number 10 car. There have been reports that Felix Rosenqvist is leaving the team with the end of this season and going to Arrow McLaren SP. There's been no announcement from either side to that effect, but it does seem likely that Felix is split there after a couple years. So that would leave the number 10 car open. I asked Chip over the weekend when he was announcing Jimmy Johnson's sponsor for his Road and Street races in the number 48, which is the fourth car on that team, if he did expect and plan to have four cars, and he affirmed that. So that number 10 car is not going away. Someone's going to be driving that, and I think we'll get that news here very soon. When you look at other seats that are up for grabs this year, you know, at the moment, there's only two Andretti Autosport drivers confirmed for 2021. That's Alex Rossi and Colton Herta. So you've got the number 26, which James Hinchcliffe drove for the last three races of the year. I would consider him a front runner for that seat. You've got Ryan Hunter-Reay, that does sound like he's close to getting DHL and his team on board for another season next year. And Marco, you would assume, would come back, but those things are not official yet. As I said, we've got Air McLaren waiting to officially announce someone in Oliver Askew's seat in the number seven. Dale Coyne Racing, both their drivers are not linked up for next year. Santino Ferrucci told me at the Harvest Grand Prix over that weekend that he was basically all but confirmed to be going or to be staying there in his seat in the number 18. Alex Palou was much more uncertain, even about finding a seat for next year and beyond. So we'll see how some of that plays out for him, even though he had a pretty strong, solid year for the most part. You go on down the list, as we said, Team Penske is going to be at four cars next year. Ray Holland and Lanigan inked Takuma Sato to a 2021 deal over the weekend, so they'll be still at two cars. I know there's been some talk that they might move to three. I think it might be a little bit premature to think that might happen for next year, but that's always a possibility. Rinus VK was announced over the weekend to be the full-time driver of the 21 car in 2021. So now they're waiting to pair a Road and Street only driver with Ed Carpenter. Obviously, Connor Daly drove in that seat this year, and Connor has said that he is really hoping that he has a chance to put together a full season program with Ed Carpenter Racing and his primary sponsor, Air Force. I think there's a really significant chance that those two could potentially do that, which might mean we see Ed Carpenter Racing at three cars next year, which would be really exciting, which would then mean, you know, you've got a Road and Street spot open there for Ed's car. Any other spots that are available, you've got Jimmy Johnson's oval-only driver, which I wouldn't expect until probably early next year, just because of none of the testing beyond today on Wednesday, and Wednesday and Thursday at IMS are on an oval. We don't have any other oval testing until next year, so there wouldn't be any reason to rush into something with that. We would have the Carlin oval driver to pair with Max Chilton is open. There's a chance, probably a pretty solid chance, that Meyer-Shank Racing does expand to a second part-time car, and that's a spot that we could see someone maybe like an Elio Castroneves, perhaps, as he's looking to find a solid seat. That could be a really good spot for him. And then I think the last one is the number four car at AJ Foyt that was driven by Charlie Kimball this year, as I said earlier. I think that there's a pretty decent chance that Charlie stays in that seat, especially after, you know, getting a chance to see him and Sebastian and the team working together really for the first time after some prep time, some legwork ahead this weekend. You know, it would be nice to get them to see, to have a chance to keep some consistency as they build that team and not just continually turn over drivers. It'd be a pretty tough thing to do. So those are the biggest highlights. I would expect a lot of wheels to be in motion over these next couple weeks for some of those big ones, like say Ganassi or Andretti. Other ones like, you know, Foyt or Meyer-Shank in particular might take a little bit of time here as we get into the much shorter offseason than we are used to, with just about 130 days or so now between today and the season opener at St. Pete in 2021.
Why don't we get to the questions from our readers on Twitter? What have you got for us?
Sure. So let's see. First question from Joe Bowling, do you expect any changes at Andretti Autosport outside of Herta's third place in Marco's Indy pole? The season has been considered a disaster by that team's standards. I would agree. I think this has been a tough year for them. They did come on strong a little bit here toward the end. Rossi had four consecutive podium finishes. Colton got a win there. I know it wasn't the Sunday that they hoped for, but they did have some really strong cars in that race. So, like I said earlier, I would expect Marco to be back. I would expect Ryan to be back for at least another year. And I really think they are really passionate about keeping James Hinchcliffe in that car in the number 26. He's got some of the backing from Genesis. I know his team is continuing to work kind of in the background to get the full season support to bring that to fruition. But it seems like there's not really quite the caliber driver maybe available that they would want to bring in for their fifth car. I think they want to stay at that five car number, and I think James eventually will be the one that will help them stay there. Question here from Kerry Leinbach. What does IndyCar have planned to make driver cooling better next year? Other than 500 testing, will Firestone be able to do some testing at other tracks before next season? On the aero screen, as we saw this season, I think that's a piece that IndyCar is just continuing to develop and tinker with a little bit. We saw several changes with it just throughout the season, even like week to week from, say, the GMR Grand Prix to Road America. You know, there were some developments with that. So I think these next 4 months or so, this off season, will give IndyCar an ability to actually decide maybe what alterations they want to stick with going forward. We saw a lot of experimentation race to race with this, but not maybe a lot of consistency or a lot of things that teams had to use from weekend to weekend. So I would expect maybe a little bit better, consistent, finalized plan for that. And I'd be surprised if they would move and switch pieces around and develop it much next year, because I think this is off season for that program is enough to get it to where it needs to be. A lot of drivers did say after the race, that October race and that muggy heat in Florida was really, really tough to deal with. Maybe actually one of the toughest, or maybe second toughest, along with IMS in July races of the year. That's certainly not something that they want to hear drivers focus on and struggling with. So I think we'll continue to see some more development there. And then Matt Vols, what was the biggest surprise, either good or bad, in your opinion this season? I really think that was probably Andretti Autosport's problems. As we said, just a big variety of things, whether it was, I think Ryan Hunter-Reay ran into the wall coming out of pit lane twice at Iowa. You had some weird mechanical stuff with Rossi's car, both at at the start of the season in particular. Colton ran a really strong race and then got ran over the top of Rinus VK that pretty much killed his Iowa weekend, that probably prevented him from challenging maybe even for a second place or a championship even this year. Marco, a really weird season with only one top 10 along with the pole. I think that was probably the biggest surprise for me, just to not have them in the championship hunt really seriously with any of their drivers. We will keep moving on here. Andrew Drybulbis says, do you know if there's any plan from the series to figure out a way to get more ovals on the schedule in the future? It's a good question. I actually have a story that I am working on for probably next week, so be on the lookout for that. But in short, Roger did say this weekend in my talk with him, he does want to see more ovals. That's something that he's passionate about. They don't want to stay at just four on a 14-race schedule. So I think that's something that we could see in 2022. But it is tough to bring a brand new track onto the schedule. It's normally probably a 2 or 3 year process. So if there's just starting talks with, say, a Kentucky or a Kansas or Chicagoland or Milwaukee or anyone who has a track that's fit to run an IndyCar race on an oval, those talks are going to take some time. There's lots of time and effort that goes into it from Firestone to test and develop the proper tire for those tracks that they haven't run at for a long time. So we could see that in 2022, but Don't maybe expect a jump back up to, say, seven ovals right away. Question from Andy Merrick. Said, Nathan, you're wrapping up your first year as an IndyCar insider. What has surprised you about covering the sport as an insider? And what are a couple things that fans might not realize about the series bosses? I think the thing that surprised me the most is just how fast these races go, man. You know, you think of an IndyCar race that's, say, 200, 300 miles, and it goes by awful quick, and it's tough at times, I think, especially at the start of the year, to just kind of keep track of everything that's going on track, especially for an oval race where those cars are just moving so quick. Feeling like I'm getting a little bit better at it, but that's still something, especially next year when we have maybe some more consistent schedule, I'll be a little bit better to give some more perspective of everything that's going on in race, on the track, all over the field from the top to the bottom. Something you might not know about the series bosses, I don't know. I mean, I feel like Roger Penske and Mark Miles, I feel like they're a pretty open book, and, you know, been pretty open really for the most part. If I think of anything, Andy, I'll comment there on Twitter, but nothing coming to mind here at the moment. Andrew Staley says, what does the 2021 driver sponsor lineup for Ganassi look like with the departure of Felix and a possible part-time schedule by Jimmy Johnson? As we talked about, Marcus Ericsson staying in the number 8. I would expect some news on the number 10 here fairly soon, but they will definitely be a 4-car full season team, so there will also be someone that's joining Jimmy in the number 48 as an oval only driver here in the future. Brian Kelly asks, any chance we see Ray Hall at a 3rd car? If so, will it be Antonio Felix da Costa? As I said, I don't know that signs are pointing toward that for next year. If da Costa is testing at Barber for the team here in just less than a week now. And I have read, I think the race.com was the one that I'd seen it at, so I wanted to give props to them. They were the ones that had reported that da Costa's contract in Formula E, it does go through the 2021 season, and with as successful as he's been there, it would be a little surprising for him to leave that sport at this time. So I don't know that he's going to jump now, but maybe he comes in 2022, and if that's a driver that they are interested in, that might line up perfectly for a timeline for them to add a 3rd car here a year from now. Question from AdamTM24 on Twitter, 3rd manufacturer speculation. Don't know that there's anything on the early or the near horizon. I do think that's something that IndyCar really wants to shore up here in probably the next year or so, because hopefully probably even by the summertime, because you need about 18 months in order to put that program together for a new engine manufacturer coming into the series. That's what I've been told by folks from around the series. So you think early or mid 2021 to the start of 2023, when IndyCar moves to a new engine design with what they announced back earlier this month, that would probably be about the ideal time to add someone, maybe the end of next season to announce it at the very latest. But they need a lot of runway in order to, you know, develop that, test that, get set up with the teams that are going to run that engine. So whether it's Ferrari, whether it's someone else, I think, you know, we would certainly hope that, say, by shortly after the Indy 500 next year, hopefully there's some news on that front, but nothing to bring to the table at this point that we haven't already heard about. Some more questions here before we finish up. Another one from Andy Merrick. Said, Nathan, you've talked so much about people in the paddock this year. What did you learn about the business side of IndyCar that you didn't know before? I think the biggest thing that stood out to me, especially getting into this full silly season, is just you realize how many drivers are just on a one-year deal, year to year, or, you know, maybe it's a technically a two-year deal, but one of those years is an option. And there's so many drivers that are racing for their careers every single race and every single year, year in and year out. It's amazing to think of how much turnover we're going to see here. And so much of it is because teams don't necessarily have a driver lined up, inked up, secured for next year and beyond. We have so many, only a handful of drivers have these 2 or 3+ year deals. It's just going to continue to be really interesting for me as someone new to the sport to see how much turnover there is. And that's something I'm really keenly focused on. Phil Whitwer asks, where does Carlin stand on a second entry for 2021? I don't know specifics on that at the moment, but I would think if they can find the right driver combination and probably a driver that comes with some budget, with some sponsorship with them, I think that would be something that they would want to get back to. They had really a pretty good amount of success from that standpoint in 2020 or in 2018, when that was the first year I think they ran two cars, kind of a shaky year in 2019. And then when we got into the pandemic, it was just going to be hard for them to pull off. They were, as we saw, scrambling in the early months of this year, trying to find a driver. They tested a couple different guys at COTA and beyond, but didn't find that right one to put into the car. And then, of course, the season got on hold. Sponsors might have gotten kind of scared away, and it was tough to bring that to the fold. So I would say it's maybe 50-50 or so to see that next year, but we will have to wait and see. Couple questions here from Mikhail Artistan. One of them, what do you think Elio is going to do next season? I know he said that he wants to be a full-time driver, but it's starting to seem a little unlikely that a full-time seat would work out for him. I'd say maybe the best chance at one of those might be potentially the Foyt seat in the number 4. But he has also said that he doesn't want to just come to race at the middle or the back of the field. And that car, as we've noted, has had some struggles getting to be a consistent competitor. So as I said earlier, maybe a better opportunity for him potentially might be that Meyer-Shank Racing seat that we expect to be a partial season entry next year. It's not exactly what he wants, but it's an opportunity to race in the 500 and maybe race at 6, 7, 8 different tracks, which I think he would probably take as a good compromise. But we will have to wait and see on him. I know when I talked to him last in early October, he said he was talking with 4 teams, and I would have thought that probably one of those included Air McLaren SP, given that he ran for them at IMS. So that's probably one that's off the table, and we'll see where else might be possibilities for him. Another question from Mikel. How did the JJ and Chip relationship come together, and what happened with McLaren as they seem poised to add him? I think from what we've heard over the last several months, Jimmy Johnson and Chip and Scott Dixon, for that matter, I think of all known and respected each other and been fairly close. Maybe Scott and Jimmy more so that case than, say, Chip and Jimmy. Although Chip has obviously been involved with NASCAR and seen Jimmy's dominance over the last couple decades there. So I think they just had a pretty solid working friendship, relationship, whatever you want to call it. And as Jimmy got, he showed some interest in coming to IndyCar, one of the first people that you're probably going to talk to as a longtime driver and a veteran of the series is Scott Dixon, and Chip Ganassi, is someone who was familiar with him over in NASCAR. And I think that, that just kind of started as one of the 2 or 3 teams that he might have started talking to, along with Air McLaren SP. He got that chance to test with Ganassi first, and I think he really I think it was really important for him to find those relationships with Scott as a teammate and a driver, along with Dario Franchitti, who's someone he's really close with, who is their driver coach on that team. I think the combination of those two drivers really sealed it for Jimmy, from what I can tell, as far as helping him decide where he wanted to be. As far as Air McLaren, he would have been teaming up with a strong driver in Pato, but still relatively new to the series. You don't really at this point have that veteran that he can lean on. And I know that they've got a lot of different folks in that organization between Taylor Kyle, who's their managing director, Gilles DeFerrin, Zach Brown, but I think he was maybe just looking for maybe a little bit more stability and a little bit more of a solid background and a resume of folks that he could learn and lean on from time to time. So those are the questions that we had this week. Thanks so much for those that that pitched those and sent those in. We certainly enjoy that part of this podcast, and we'll look forward to a lot more of that this offseason.
All right, and we thank you for listening. Please go to IndyStar.com for plenty more on the IndyCar season, off-season. Nathan has to get out to IMS right now for the testing, so we appreciate you listening.